For, coming through the narrows, we had to lie very near the southern point, and there we saw all three of them kneeling together on a spit of sand, with their arms raised in supplication. It went to all of our hearts, I think, to leave them in that wretched state, but we could not risk another mutiny, and to take them home for the gibbet would have been a cruel sort of kindness. The doctor hailed them and told them of the stores we had left, and where they were to find them. But they continued to call us by name and appeal to us to be merciful, and not leave them to die in such a place. At last, seeing the ship still bore on her course, and now swiftly drawing out of earshot, one of them leaped to his feet, and, with a hoarse cry, whipped his musket to his shoulder, and sent a shot whistling over Silver's head and through the mainsail. After that we kept under cover of the bulwarks, and when next I looked out they had disappeared from the spit, and the spit itself had almost melted out of sight in the growing distance. That was the end of that, and before noon, to my inexpressible joy, the highest rock of Treasure Island had sunk into the blue round of sea. We were so short of men that everyone on board had to bear a hand, only the captain lying on a mattress in the stern and giving his orders, for, though greatly recovered, he was still in want of quiet. We laid for the nearest port in Spanish America, for we could not risk the voyage home without fresh hands, and as it was, what with baffling winds and a couple of fresh gales, we were all worn out before we reached it. It was just at sundown when we cast anchor in a most beautiful landlocked gulf, and were immediately surrounded by all sort of people, offering fruits and vegetables. The sight of so many good-humored faces, the taste of the tropical fruits, and above all the lights that began to shine in the town, made a most charming contrast to our dark and bloody sojourn on the island, and the doctor and the squire, taking me along with them, went ashore to pass the early part of the night. Here they met the captain of an English man of war, fell in talk with him, went on board his ship, and, in short, had so agreeable a time that day was breaking when we came alongside the Hispaniola. Ben Gunn was on deck alone, and as soon as we came on board, he began, with wonderful contortions, to make us a confession. Silver was gone. The Maroon had connived at his escape in a shore boat some hours ago, and he now assured us he had only done so to preserve our lives, which would certainly have been forfeit if that man with the one leg had stayed aboard. But this was not all. The sea cook had not gone empty-handed. He had cut through a bulkhead unobserved, and had removed one of the sacks of coin, worth perhaps 300 or 400 guineas, to help him on his further wanderings. I think we were all pleased to be so cheaply quit of him. Well, to make a long story short, we got a few hands on board, made a good cruise home, and the Hispaniola reached Bristol, just as Mr. Blandley was beginning to think of fitting out her consort. 5 men only of those who had sailed returned with her. Drink and the devil had done for the rest with a vengeance, although, to be sure, we were not quite in so bad a case as that other ship they sang about, with 1 man of her crew alive what put to sea with 75. All of us had an ample share of the treasure, and used it wisely or foolishly according to our natures. Captain Smollett is now retired from the sea. Gray not only saved his money, but, being suddenly smit with the desire to rise, also studied his profession, and he is now mate and a part owner of a fine full-rigged ship, married besides and a father of a family. As for Ben Gunn, he got £1,000, which he spent or lost in 3 weeks, or, to be more exact, in 19 days, for he was back begging on the 20th. Then he was given a lodge to keep, exactly as he had feared upon the island, and he still lives, a great favorite, with the country boys, and a notable singer in church. Of Silver we have heard no more. That formidable seafaring man with one leg has at last gone clean out of my life. But I dare say he still lives in comfort. It is to be hoped so, for his chances of comfort in another world are very small. The bar Silver and the arms still lie, for all that I know, where Flint buried them, and certainly they shall lie there for me. Oxen and wain ropes would not bring me back again to that accursed island. And the worst dreams that ever I have are when I hear the surf booming about its coasts, or start upright in bed, with the sharp voice of Captain Flint still ringing in my ears. Pieces of 8! Pieces of 8!